What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm so close to clicking leave meeting every time that bullshit comes up. It's like, yes, I consent. That's why I'm fucking here.
All right, Sophie, we're starting with that line from panel.
Welcome to Spooky Week on Woo-hoo. It Could Happen Here.
Today, we are discussing a truly spooky topic, one that everyone is just really gonna hate. And it's we're talking about
Let's say it.
Esoteric Kekism and meme magic. So, Chatelet, my brothers and sisters, come along on a ride.
Chatelet.
We read a whole book for this.
At least I did. You read a book just for this. I would say that, like, all of the books I read from age 19 to 22 prepared me
Have been preparing you for this?
Yeah, the books I read while I was doing psychedelics twice a week all really were good background on this subject.
That so, is Garrison, that is true.
You want to kick us off?
I don't. So I think first thing we're talking about we're gonna emphasize awareness over amplification. My goal for this is so that we can all be more aware of kind of the power that images on the internet can have over influencing the actual world. And talking about people who believe this to a ridiculous degree and how they actually have been able to institute change, not only because of this belief, just because of their dedication to this practice. Because it's a thing that exists and it has had real world ramifications. And it's good to understand that that's a thing. And that also maybe we can influence the way we, like us, use the internet to also maybe make good things happen as opposed to just being doomers all the time.
Hell yeah.
So that's kind of what I wanted to start with.
Many dubs to that, Garrison. Complete keck with you.
God, no. Although, to be fair, the past few days I have just been spamming the It Could Happen Here group chat with horrible nonsense around keck.
It has been the most insufferable week of my life.
Horrible nonsense.
Like paragraphs of it.
Paragraphs. Walls of text so big.
Any actually safe working environment that cared about its employees would have fired you long ago.
Yeah. So I think the other thing that we should definitely mention is that any type of like occultism, mysticism, or like woo, does have a decent history within right wing political ideas, and specifically like more extreme like right wing stuff from the past few hundred years. Like everyone's, most people know that like the modern, like the early Nazis had some mystical stuff going on. There was a lot more stuff going on behind the scenes. A lot of their favorite like authors also were like practicing occultists. So this is a thing that goes back a while. You can even see this to some degree with like how close Christianity is to a lot of the right wing, to a lot of like the modern right wing in the States as well. A lot of what we would consider evangelical Christianity has a lot of stuff that's actually very similar to occultism. They just use different terms because occultism and like magic is taboo, but it's actually the same thing. So it's all like just it's interacting with the same systems, just with different words. So like this is the thing that is not just on the internet. This is a thing that's been going on for thousands of years. In particular, the past 100 years, we've seen a big rise in the amount of like of occultism and mysticism specifically tied to politics.
Yeah, and there's this, I mean, there have been a couple of articles written just recently about the fact that a lot of like the woo-woo left, the kind of not really esoteric, but kind of mainstream occulty left, like the pop occulty left has increasingly turned towards stuff like QAnon. And a big chunk of it is like this openness to like feel power in coincidences. Synchronicity would be the
synchronicity
the term.
Is the term.
Yeah. And just a general open mindedness to maybe too many things.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you can see this on a lot of sides, because it is definitely not just the right wing. I mean, it's like the biggest example of this would probably be facets of QAnon. The past few years have done very similar types of things. There's a lot of other stuff going on behind the scenes, like how Pepe operated was very similar to that, which is what we're mainly talking about today. But you know, there is also stuff like this on the left wing, whether it be like New Agey type stuff that seems to kind of mostly be bullshit. But there's a, you know, other type of like folk magic or like indigenous traditions that have I would say slightly more
significantly more like there's
reasonable actually stuff going on. As opposed
and,
to
and,
just like new age selling books and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. One of the things that also separates actual religion from religion that kind of has formed in this mimetic way recently is that all of this stuff, particularly what we're talking about today, formed simultaneously with political sentiment and was crafted. And in a lot of cases, like they state facts wrong specifically because they are trying to craft a political narrative alongside this like weird quasi spiritual thing.
I mean, and speaking of spiritualism coming to the same, this is, you know, we're all kind of anarchist-y adjacent here. And one of the things that really came up around the same time as anarchism in the 20th century was a concept called chaos magic, which was really tied to a lot of anarchist thought and anarchist kind of thinkers. Some of the most famous chaos magicians are like explicitly anarchist, someone like Grant Morrison. Others are like Discordians, which have a lot of like anarchist crossover, stuff like Robert Anton Wilson, which kind of operates in that same ocean.
He played a big role in kind of pulling me away from proto-alt-right style beliefs. And I think also a lot of his work was very intelligently crafted because he wrote about conspiracies, he wrote about esoteric magic, but always with a really intent eye on increasing people's defenses to this kind of stuff, what we're talking about today. He was very like cognizant of that. Like he wrote about conspiracy as an enthusiast, but also as someone who was trying to stop kind of unchecked conspiratorial belief. He went about that in peculiar ways, but he was an odd man.
Yeah, and the reason why I've been getting more into this type of stuff the past year, and the reason why I really like chaos magic, I like it as like a postmodern system of magic, of looking at how basically if magic is just ideas and trying to figure out how our brains can interact with the physical world, then chaos magic introduces a lot of interesting stuff around like late stage capitalism, because it's explicitly tied to like postmodern art and postmodern thought, and the way, you know, brands and marketing and specifically the internet all affects our minds. All this stuff gets talked about in chaos magic a lot, and I really like using that framework for things. And speaking of that kind of stuff, specifically around the internet, we're gonna be talking about the first thing I want to mention is like the concept of searching for something, and then you're gonna find it. Whether that, you know, Robert Anton Wilson and like the Illuminatus trilogies has like and Discordianism has like 23 and the Law of Fives, right?
I read that book when I was 20, and I have been like seeing 23s repeatedly at like significant moments in my life for the last 14 years or so. Like,
yeah,
it's like once you get that kind of meme implanted in your brain, it can stick with you for forever.
And this happens to everything, you know. This happens to everyone. Like, once you learn about a new topic, the next day you'll see it somewhere, right? You'll be like, oh, you'll learn a new word, you'll be reading it, and it's in all these places that you didn't see it before. This happens all of the time with everything. This is how this is like how synchronicity works.
And this is where religions come from.
And this is what religions are.
Yeah, throughout history. And it's because, like, this all has its roots in why we're very good hunters. We are pattern recognition.
Yeah.
We're pattern recognition. Like, our brains are pattern recognizing machines. That's what we're best at. And it means that we're good at spotting berries and tracking deer, and it also means that we can't stop making religions.
We
no can't matter
stop
what
making
we do.
Religions and cults. Yeah, and if we have one too many synchronicities, we can change the entire way we view view about the whole world. Which can have varying degrees of effects. Sometimes that can, if it's just a little bit, that can maybe actually be very helpful. If you join a weird cult that does messed up stuff, then it's like, yeah, that's a problem.
Sometimes it ends in Burning Man, and sometimes it ends in Burning Men.
Yep.
Drop the bomb on that one.
So, first thing I want to kind of discuss before we get into the actual timeline of how Pepe and Kekism became a thing, I want to just do a brief overview of sigils and memes.
This
idea of what, like, Let's take the original concept of the meme, which is like, you know, it's genes are genetic, memes are cultural. These are cultural ideas that can spread like a virus. And usually memes since the internet has become way more popular, memes have become more tied to images. Like memes are a much more visual thing now, whereas in the 90s they were more of just like an idea concept, but now they have like this extra visual backing.
Yeah.
So a sigil is a magical concept tied mostly to chaos magic, which is basically an abstract concept or like a specific concept put into an abstract image that then gets charged, and then it's going to manifest itself in your life. The reason why this works is because part of this desire gets implanted deep in your brain when you charge it through like a trance, or there's different methods of charging sigils, but you have this concept and this idea and this desire, and it gets put into you, so you're gonna kind of subconsciously do things that influence it into becoming something that you can see. Just like, you know, if you hear about 23, you're gonna see it. Same thing for this. It's the same kind of base concept. And then Grant Morrison, comic book writer, who's probably my favorite comic book writer, he's really the only person that's developed sigils more since their inception, with the concept of a hyper sigil, which is taking the same idea of like wanting to influence change in the world via this visual medium of a sigil, and instead of just having it be like an abstract glyph that you charge, a hyper sigil is an entire work of art with this express interest. So everything that you do in this is trying to get some type of real world change. And it's very, very intentional, right? I mean, a lot of art already operates like this. This is why a lot of postmodern magic is very similar just to like making art, because it's the same kind of basic idea, whether that be something like, you know, like The Matrix, or, you know, any type of art kind of does this already if it is good. And it can find ways to influence reality. So memes operate on this same way, and eventually people actually found it. Eventually people on 4chan realized that they were doing sigils and started using this word, because it's really the same thing. When you're altering all of these images of this frog and posting it into all these different kind of more abstract, more like ugly, obscure, kind of like weird, like surreal types of memes, and you're spamming them on politicians' Twitter account, you're basically doing a group sigil and a group hyper sigil, because you're all making these individual things and you're spamming them into the world. And because there's so many of them, they're gonna have a real world effect.
And they're gonna have a real world effect, in part because of the way human brains work, and in part because of the way algorithms work.
Yep.
Which is one of the things where, like, it's easy, especially if you're an impressionable kid, to mistake the algorithm doing what it's designed to do, which is find patterns, groups of people sharing something, and expand that to a larger group of people because, oh, if this cluster of people likes this, this will probably be something that's very successful.
Algorithms are great at making synchronicities because that's what they're designed to do.
That's what they're supposed to do.
That's the whole point of why they exist.
And that's why this is – that's why our – because as you stated a little earlier, and one of these days on Bastards, we're going to talk about Helena Blavatsky and like the Theosophy movement in more detail and like – all of the occult stuff that fed into the early stage of the Third Reich. But the occult back then is very different from the kind of occult feeding into fascism now, which is heavily based around synchronicity because it's also heavily based around social media and the way memes spread.
Yeah, that's why I think chaos magic has really gotten kind of a resurgence the past few years with social media and how algorithms develop, because they do mirror a lot of the concepts within chaos magic, because the internet's kind of a chaotic place, but it's also, it's not just pure chaos. It is chaos within a framework of order, which is why I like the chaos star, like the actual like chaos, like sigil. Yes, the arrows are pointing in every direction, but you can make a perfect circle around all of the arrows. It's because it's not just pure chaos. It actually is contained within this other framework.
And by the way, Garrison, when you started talking about synchronicities and sigils, I checked my phone for a second and saw that it was 5:17 on October 23rd. Five, of course, contains both 2 and 3 and is thus a sacred number. October 23rd, I shouldn't have to explain why that's significant.
Robert,
then 17 is a sacred number.
Robert,
it's the 22nd.
It's the 22nd.
Yeah, but it's the 23rd on my phone.
Why is it
my phone's fucked up?
On your phone?
Because that's the universe, baby. That's the synchronicity. I'm living in the future, motherfuckers.
And what time is it that it's not right now?
It was 5:17 on my phone.
And the other time it is
2 p.m.
I don't need to know what time it is.
Sophie,
your
this is,
default reality.
No.
Sophie.
Yeah, you are on a different dimensional plane now. We have split into two different ones.
Why is mine wrong?
I think this gives us a perfect opportunity for the audience to find their own synchronicities in these ads. Because who knows what's going to happen?
Very
who knows
good
what's going to play?
Spooky.
You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So look for patterns and you'll find them. Woo! Mm-hmm. Here's some ads.
I hope it's an ad for the Egyptian goddess Maat.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. We're gonna now actually kind of get into some of the actual Pepe nonsense.
I think another important
part to mention is that, like, for a lot of people doing this online, this is like an online pattern that happens all the time. It happens with stuff like this. It happens with cat boys. It happens with a whole bunch of stuff. Is that, like, stuff starts as a joke and then you do it a lot. And the repetition basically makes you do it genuinely.
Yeah, like me talking about getting all of my followers to a compound in Idaho where we die fighting the FDA.
Exactly.
Know? Eventually, that turns into an actual death cult.
So it starts as a joke, and then under repetition, it becomes genuine. This happens to basically almost everything on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, this leads to Garrison and I doing the inevitable Robert Evans Behind the Bastards episode.
That's
our last episode.
Yeah, it was the last one.
That's a three-parter if I ever heard one.
You hope so. You wish.
What are cat boys?
That is a different podcast.
I'm so glad you're here.
That is a different podcast, I think.
Yeah, hi. Sorry. I know I only interject briefly. Are they like pre-furries? Is that something different entirely?
No,
post-furry. It's kind of like post-left.
It's rehumanizing the furry. So, like, the same way that
they're humans too.
The same way Sonic the Hedgehog is a re-Mickey Mouseification of Vegeta. Catboys are a rehumanification of furries. This is a whole process. I can explain this in great detail in a later episode.
You're good,
but I think we have enough to talk about already.
Understood. Thank you so much. I'm going to go get my dog.
Okay, sure. Would someone be willing to sacrifice their own mentality to describe the rise of Pepe originally in the early 20-teens?
Yeah, so it started as this guy's comic.
Yes.
There was nothing particularly weird about. Yeah, it was just it was a dude's comic. He was like Feels Good Man was kind of his
catchphrase. Feels Good Man.
He was a chill dude.
Yeah,
not a fascist.
Comic Pepe's actually pretty fun.
Yeah, Comic Pepe's great. He's and like, the artist is lovely.
He's like a millennial slacker who doesn't really know what to do with his life after 9/11, after the financial crash. He's just trying to kind of get by. The comic's fine.
Yeah, the comic's fine, but the art, just like kind of the specifics of how he drew Pepe made him very well suited for a meme, because he's expressive, and he shows up and starts getting spread in 4chan, and, you know, that kind of idea goes viral, and it particularly gets attached to a lot of, like, the political shit on poll and the people who are, like, churning into Gamergate and the alt-right.
Sad Pepe gets very popular. Smug Pepe gets very popular. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Keck is does tie Keck into bit, the frog shit.
Keck
yeah.
is a bit late. Keck's a bit like later on. I think we'll go over more for like how Pepe is like the cartoon character got, you know, as soon as it becomes a meme, it spreads out into all corners. And the people who memed this hardest were on 4chan. So this is how Pepe became very kind of tied to this. And I think the last bullet in Pepe, really solidifying him as an alt-right meme specifically, was the Richard Spencer punch. I think that's the thing that actually was like done. It's like, no, Pepe is just this now. He can't be anything else. Because when Richard Spencer was being punched, he was describing what Pepe was. That was what's happening in that specific viral moment. If you want to talk about like magical terms, this is Pepe getting like charged. Like this is the idea of like this idea getting charged, because it is now going to be proliferated to the masses in this moment of like pure emotion. Yeah. So That's when Pepe really gets tied to that. And I think Hillary Clinton made it very, very worse.
Yep.
The way she talked about this kind of stuff on her speeches basically gave the alt-right a baseball bat to hit her with.
The problem that Clinton and everyone else, because like a big part of, I would argue that like the largest part of why Pepe became a thing that was destined to last was that pundits and politicians, including Hillary and media people, kept talking about it as a fascist symbol.
Yeah.
And kept discussing like what it was, and that anyone who grew up on the internet, who grew up around these communities, knows that you would ignore them as much as possible. To the extent that that's possible, you don't feed the trolls.
You don't give them power.
Yeah, you don't. And talking about it again, this is like chaos magic shit. Like referencing it, bringing it up, bringing it into the real world gives it power.
That's the thing that feeds it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how it got so much more power. The more Clinton talked about it, the more news media wrote about it. Everyone got so excited on 4chan. That is them winning. Them seeing this thing, and then this goes
back pre even it being far right. I can remember because I was in these spaces when they first started doing shit like raids on the Church of Scientology. Every time there would be actual like news coverage of what people on the internet did. It got people so fucking excited because, like, the internet had been this thing that didn't matter for the longest time.
I think in the book I read about this kind of stuff, they did use the example of, like, Anonymous and the raids on Scientology being, like, a precursor to this type of, like, meme magic, of this thing of, like internet forums influencing the real world through repetition and getting to, like, grow power, but getting people who don't use the internet to talk about these same things.
Yep.
It was like a precursor to then what we saw on the alt-right, which is a pretty common opinion. And then enter the Egyptian gods. Robert, do you wanna discuss?
How did we get to that?
That's what we're gonna say next, is how this intersects with Egyptian gods.
So the ancient pharaohs played a card game of ancient and terrible power. Man, nobody watched Yu-Gi-Oh as a kid. This is
I'm surrounded by heathens,
my buddy.
No,
yeah, man.
Robin, do you wanna discuss Keck?
Yeah, I mean, so way back in the day, and I think this even predates World of Warcraft. I remember it first happening on like StarCraft games online. There would be gamers from Korea, and like when you were doing like a Zerg rush or something, which is when you have a bunch of guys and they all attack the enemy base or whatever, they would type out their term for LOL, which was like kek.
K-E-K, yeah.
K-E-K. So it would usually just look like a stream of K-E-K-E-K-E-K-E-K, over and over and over again. This really took off in World of Warcraft, where like there were Korean gold farmers were a big thing, and like kek was something that like everyone kind of knew what it meant because it was often the only thing you could understand as an American that like these people would be typing. And it, as a result of kind of all of that, it took off in internet culture as just an LOL. And specifically, like one of the things that's going on here. So as the mid-aughts dawn and the internet becomes serious business and like social media really, and everybody's, even before social media is dominant, but just when everybody's taking the internet seriously, it's clear there's a lot of money in it. It's mainstream. You have this kind of second generation of internet people who got on in the late 90s, early 2000s when they were kids, who get frustrated at the fact that all of these different terms and phrases and like bits of internet culture that they had identified with are going mainstream. And
normies
Keck is kind
are,
of a way no, of
normies
like,
are using them, yeah.
Yeah, and Keck is, everyone knows what LOL is. People don't know what Keck is. So in places like 4chan, that becomes a really popular thing. And Keck kind of is like, so Keck as a term for laughter is like floating around at the same time as like Pepe memes. And so whenever you like meme something into the mainstream, whenever like some 4chan op or whatever you want to call it, like succeeds in getting mainstream
coverage. As soon as Hillary Clinton mentions Pepe on stage, everyone on 4chan goes Keck because they're laughing. Yeah. They go Keck,
and they say
Keck,
stuff
Keck,
like top Keck and whatnot. Yeah. And eventually somebody realizes that there's an Egyptian goddess. One of the translations of that god and goddess's name is K-E-K. Now, there's a couple other translations.
There's a whole bunch of issues with this if you wanted to look at this with a rational kind like, of brain. It's because like this, there was this old family of gods. There were very, very old Egyptian gods.
They all had
male and female versions. The male versions all had frog heads. Because
frogs can change their gender.
Yeah, because frogs can
Park
change.
Taught us all.
So like, So, like, this whole era of Egyptian gods all had frog heads. So there was one of them that was named Keck, who was a god of chaos. And this also played into how 4chan was using Trump, because, like, they liked Trump mostly as a chaotic force that got people angry, because that's what 4chan wanted to do as well. They wanted to be a chaotic force that gets people angry. So that's why they really latched on to Trump. And then when they found out that, oh, there's this god named Keck, who is, like, the lord of,
primordial darkness.
Primordial darkness, yeah. And this idea
of primordial darkness. So not even chaos as much as, chaos pre-being.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like Uranus and Greco-Roman faith, right? Like a god kind of before the gods that are more well-known.
But, like, this was a synchronicity, so they took it as, like, you know, the same way religions take synchronicity and create like divinity. They took this as like divinity. Now again, this starts as a joke, but you do it enough and you start to take it seriously.
And there's you get a mix of real like Egyptology, which is that there was a god named Keck, like among a bunch of other gods. One of the ways he was depicted was with a frog head, but also like bad Egyptology. Like I found an article on the WordPress blog, Pepe the Frog Faith, which is a
bastion of archaeology.
Yeah. And the title is Amateur Egyptologist Weighs In on the Frog Statue Hieroglyphs. And one of the things he points out.
Oh, are you talking about the frog statue that isn't Keck, but they thought it was Keck?
Yeah. And a number of things. So like one of the things this guy claims is that the hieroglyphics for Keck are a frog man, and then a couple of what he calls baskets. First up, they're cups, not baskets. Second, the actual hieroglyphics for K-E-K don't include the little frogman. They're like two of the little cups in this weird T-shaped thing. Like, it's bad. He's, again, amateur Egyptologist. Like, he's just a kid who was Googling stuff and, like, got some – either lied or got some hieroglyphics wrong. But this kind of stuff compounds.
But Keck as like an idea is like now we have a backing of an ancient god. Again, first as a joke, but then some people started to take it more seriously. Really, really caught on among people because it's funny. Like it's just funny and ridiculous.
It is funny. It's so extremely funny.
Of course it's going to catch on 4chan because it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Right. So they're going to start using this and repeating this and creating whole new memes. Creating like there's like an eight part book series that's like fake books written by like someone who's like just memeing but pretending to take it seriously. But like the authenticity doesn't actually matter because it exists. It doesn't actually matter how authentic it is.
Yeah. Like and there's weird coincidences that continue to occur. Like one of the biggest being there's this like phrase Chatelet, which creeps up in all of this and becomes like this exhortation that they use, like a way of like exclaiming and such. And then somebody figures out that Chatelet is also a song, like an Italo disco song, I think from the 70s. And the album that Chatelet is on has like a frog man face on the cover. And so they're like, it's a sign. And because, like all of the
because you're going to find frogs wherever you look now, because that has become the new 23 thing.
I mean,
you're right.
Frogs are not uncommon. Frogs are everywhere.
You're going to find them everywhere now.
And there are every ancient religion everywhere in the world. I'm going to guarantee you there's some fucking frogs in it because like they're everywhere and they're
old.
Weird creatures. People pay attention to frogs.
They've been around for a long time.
Yeah. Frogs have been around a while.
Cute.
So
Kermit the Frog.
The other thing that happened. So people not only basically created their whole mythology around this, creating different types of religion. There was like Keckism as a religion, the cult of Keck, esoteric Keckism, all with their own distinct differences because these people spend all their time on the internet.
So they developed
these things, and they also found this old frog statue that they said was Keck. It actually isn't. It's actually a god called Heket. But that doesn't matter. But on the base of the statue, it had glyphs which appear to us modern humans as they look like someone sitting on a computer. Like they look like someone sitting in front of a monitor on a keyboard. And on the other side of the keyboard is a DNA is like what looks like a DNA spiral. So this is like genes are DNA, memes are cultural DNA. This is a glyph of the god Keck on a statue with someone on a computer with a DNA spiral. Of course you're gonna take this as like some like message from the gods. You're like, I am supposed to be by my meme. I'm doing Keck's work to put Trump into office.
Yeah, it's God, that's frustrating.
It sure is. It sure is. But I mean, all of those in the in-group, this is like the statue was just a depiction of what the Keck people and the Pepe spammers were doing, posting on the internet to manifest real world change. And that's all it is.
If you want to see other examples of this, like if you look at the ancient alien stuff, there's this like famous Mayan hieroglyph of the astronomer that's like, if you know what a telescope is because you're looking at it 1,000 years after it was carved, it kind of looks like it might be a telescope. And it's part of what like people say, like, oh, this is proof that like that this is an alien, like he's looking at a fucking telescope. It's like, no, it was, there's other explanations for it. It was something like that somebody carved. Yeah,
I think there's another thing that you start running into here. Like, and I see this like not even like I see this just this is just on the internet all the time. Like, I see leftists do this or like, so like, okay, so you learn something and then, oh, it's not true. But then people will keep spreading the thing because they'll say, and I've had other people say this, like, well, it might
as well
be.
Power.
Like,
it might as well be. It has more power with it, so you're still going to believe it.
Yeah, yeah, like when I talk about the fact that Will Wheaton murdered 3 people in 1998.
If you repeat, this is the message.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a knife.
What?
It's horrible. Yeah. Now, I mean, he was in Thailand at the time, so he was able to get out, and we don't extradite. So he's got out scot-free. But yeah.
Okay, word.
But I mean, like, this is like the same. He's a murderer. This is the same thing that Trump does, which we'll talk about a bit. We'll talk about a bit. Is like, if you repeat the thing enough, it becomes true for large swaths of the population. That's all truth actually needs to be for people. Yep. I think we're gonna go on break and come back and close us up. And finally finish this horrible discussion. Anyway.
You know who won't meme fascism?
Well, actually, KFC.
You're right.
Have you seen the KFC fascist posting on Twitter?
Yeah.
There's like a Spanish KFC account that has been doing, that is up to some shit.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I hate that's a sentence that you got to say. Yeah, I just hate it.
Products.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. I have finished an entire dark meat bucket, and I am so full.
Yeah.
Yep. And now I'm sad. Bucket. I'm sad because I'm still thinking of the fascist KFC Twitter account. So the other thing I want to mention is kind of Trump's own power of belief kind of idea, and how Trump was basically, using esoteric terms, was able to basically create an alternate reality for millions of people to live in. And there's really no getting through to them now because they are literally just in a different dimension.
Yeah,
and
facts don't matter.
There's no way to pierce that other dimension. They're basically living in just a totally alternate reality. There's no use saying that it is the one that we live in. So Trump is obsessed with a few of these ideas. He's less in he's less interested in the woo and more interested in the power of positive thinking, power of your own belief.
Yeah.
He grew up in a movement and a specific
Norman
church.
Vincent Peale stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. He grew up following a specific movement and church that falls under the umbrella called New Thought.
Yup.
Which is where how strong Trump's ego is comes from this idea of that you need to reinforce yourself and reinforce your own victories, because if you do that, you're gonna find them. Right. If you're looking for 23, you're gonna find it. If you're looking for your own victories, you're gonna force them to happen, even if they don't happen to other people. Right. So that we see this happening successfully with the 2016 election. We see both all of the memeing. Everything that happened in the 2016 election worked for Trump, of course he didn't win the popular vote, but that doesn't actually matter. But it worked in getting him to office. Now it worked less well for the 2020 election, but still his reassertions that he won still gave us a lot of real world results, like the January 6th Capitol insurrection. Yep. So it's this, right? So this type of idea that if you reinforce this thing, if you reinforce this belief, if you have this idea and you keep putting it out into the world, it's going to manifest some type of real world result.
Yeah.
And that was January 6th. That's what that was.
Yeah, baby.
And that's the kind of the world we live in now. It's like the weaponized unreality world where people, because of how media works, because of how the internet works, they're able to create this chaotic sphere of energy and ideas that can spread so much faster than anything used to be, that everyone can segment their own reality into two degrees that we've never really seen before because of how fast information can travel now. It is a relatively new thing, the way that this can operate. So memes themselves, and Pepe and all this kind of stuff, undoubtedly had an impact on not only just the 2016 election, but just the entire political climate surrounding the whole Trump presidency. Now to the degree to which we can credit meme magic or the god Keck, that part is meaningless because mm-hmm. the effect is the same. The synchronicities were still experienced, and mm-hmm. and truth is just experiential. So the beliefs that we kind of hold will shape how we experience things anyway, and that will experience what the actual truth is. There is a great Robert Anton Wilson quote that is reality is what you can get away with.
Yup.
And that summarizes how Trump was able to be so successful. Yeah. It's because he was able to shape reality, right? I think me and Chris were talking about this the other day about how Chris, do you want to say the thing about the Democratic Party and Republican Party and how reality?
Oh yeah,
is different?
Yeah. Okay. So there's a thing, and Garrison I think was too young for this, but there's a very famous thing that one of the Bush administration people said. about how Democrats lived in the reality-based community, and this was like a whole thing in the 2000s. This is during the Bush administration, and everyone loses their minds, and this is like a whole meme on the Democrats that's like, oh, well, we're the reality-based community, and they're not. But then this is the interesting part. If you look at the second part of that quote, right, what he's actually saying is that, so the Democrats are the reality-based community, right? They analyze reality. The Republican Party is the party that creates reality because they're the people in control of the empire. And this is what neoconservatism was, right? And, you know, the argument here basically is that the Democrats are, you know, they're always going to be a step behind because they're merely analyzing reality, whereas the Republicans are using the power of sort of the state to, mm-hmm. you know, change and define it. And this worked for them. You know, I would argue this is how they came into power.
This is how this is what they're still doing. Yeah,
yeah.
This is why every president since Ronald Reagan has just been Ronald Reagan with a mask.
Yeah, but I think there's something very important here, specifically about how Bush took office, right? Because Bush steals the election, right? Bush does, like, the thing that Trump was trying to do is what George mm-hmm. Bush did in 2000s, but
with a very specific kind of riot. Yeah,
yeah. But this is the thing. This is the thing that Bush and the neocons understood that the Trumpists kind of understand but never quite solidified, because they're not sort of insider political actors, which is that, okay, so all of the stuff about saying something and it becoming real, right, there's sort of a limit to this if you don't have a gun. Now, if you have a gun, then the limits of that are you know, you can do basically whatever you want, because you can force everyone else to also accept this as reality. You know, this is mm-hmm. what the state is, right? And there's a whole thing. This is a couple, like, performance theory where it's like, yeah, so like you saying the thing makes it so, right? Well, this is what a state is, and this is how Bush won the election, because unlike Trump, whose people tried to, like, take power directly by, like, storming the Capitol, Bush was smart, and Bush was like, oh, okay, I'm gonna declare that I won the election, but instead of, like, openly doing it, right, I'm going to get the Supreme Court to declare that I'm president. And, you know, and this requires the Brooks Brothers riot to stop the count and all this other stuff. Like, you know, it doesn't. Yeah, yeah, it's great. But it's like, it doesn't matter that, you know, he didn't win Florida. Like, if the votes had actually been counted, he would not have won Florida. But because he was able to get the court to say that he was president, he was president. And that is
the concept of magic words.
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm. And this is all the state is, right? It's the state is magic with a gun behind it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the state is magic, because, like, it's like, yeah, you're right. It's like magic can't have a hard cap. There's going to be a certain amount of people that, you know, with Trump's reality altering kind of power, there's a certain that there is a hard cap on how much that can influence the general population. But if you have a gun behind that, that gives it so much more enforceable power.
Yeah, yeah. To go back to Egyptian mythology, one of the attitudes they had about the pharaoh is that reality was whatever the pharaoh declared. A lot of societies have this idea towards their monarchs, and the duty of his people is to make reality conform to the pharaoh's will. And, like, yeah. That's what the GOP does. Like, fascists always do.
I think the quote surrounding, like, yeah, the Democrats are the reality based party because they you know, observe
they
reality,
accept the reality that
and libs and Democrats are like, yes, they take this on pride. Like, yes, we are rational. We observe reality. Meanwhile, the Republicans are like, no, you just observe it, but we can create it. I think that is a great example of how those two parties operate politically, and how, because, like, yes, they're both right leading parties, but here's the difference for how they actually operate: is that one of them is way more passive in their observing of reality, and one is okay with getting their hands dirty and actually forcing this type of reality altering changes.
I will say, I think, like, one thing to close this out is that we can tie this all the way back to the second part of the Dual Power episode, which is that the neocon project doesn't work, and the reason it doesn't work is that, you know, they basically they lose militarily, and that implodes the entire project. And so, you know, and if you look back at, like, all of this stuff about how we can shape reality, that stopped being true the moment that, you know, like, they lose control of Basra. Or, like, mm-hmm. you know, they run into
fucking
other people.
Muqtada al-Sadr proves to be unkillable by all the weapons of empire.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, and Sadr does this by, like, you know, Sadr sets up a bunch of baby clinics, mm-hmm. right? He's like, here's a bunch of clinics. Here, we'll give help to pregnant mothers. Yeah. Like, are you guys really going to shoot us? You know, he builds a militia around this, and he's able to, like
he's one of the smartest people on the planet. He's extremely good at what he does.
He's not a good guy, but like able to just completely shatter the neocons. Like they're dead. Like they don't like that project, which was like the culmination of this incredible intellectual project, incredible military project, and they got their absolute ass kicked by a bunch of people doing dual power.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think, and I really do want to talk more about kind of chaos magic and this.
There's
kind
a lot
of stuff
to talk
on the pod in the future.
I think this is a good grounding,
and I think, I think this is a great intro and to how these concepts overlap with politics.
And I'd like to disagree on the end of this with one aspect, Garrison, because you said their reality can't be pierced, but the ancient texts speak of a spear that once pierced the side of Christ itself, and while Hitler held it, his armies were ascended, but it was stolen. And if we can find the spear of Longinus, Garrison, we can pierce their reality.
I have a fedora. I have a whip. We can.
We all have fedoras, Garrison.
Let's do it. Let's go. All right. We are off to find the spear. That signs us off.
The spear of destiny.
You can follow our adventures on Happened Here Pod and Cool Zone Media on Twitter. I'm sure we will give you updates for our spear adventures on the pod in the future.
Yeah, Sophie, we need $500,000 to find the spear of destiny, by
the
way. Okay. Okay. Great.
See you on the other side.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.